Good morning, early birds. You've caught the worm, a podcast from Yellowstone Public Radio and our friends in the public media spectrum across the region, bringing you the latest news. I'm Carl Lengel. It is the 15th of April, 2026, a Wednesday. The race is heating up for Democrats in Montana's Western Congressional District. The four candidates have largely been cordial, but traded sharp criticisms during a Helena debate over the weekend. Montana Public Radio's Shaley Rager reports.
The candidates are Matt Raines, a veteran and Sims rancher, Sam Forstag, a Missoula smoke jumper and organizer, Russell Cleveland, a veteran and entrepreneur from St. Regis, and Ryan Bussey, a Kalispell author and former firearms executive. Cleveland was the first to aim criticism at Forstag for being endorsed by the Federation of Unions, AFL-CIO. Cleveland argues Forstag will be beholden to their support for data centers in Montana.
We have to be careful about who we hitch our wagon to. Now is not the time for picking the best show pony. It's picking who's going to stand up for the best interests of Montana.
Bussey accused Forstag of encouraging dark money to flood the race.
One of the tenets of my campaign is that I think we should hold ourselves to a higher standard, Democrats to a higher standard.
Forstag responded that he's not taking corporate PAC donations and returned fire for both Bussey and Cleveland for running with vast personal wealth. He said he's proud to be endorsed by unions.
We got folks on this stage, someone who is worth $25 million, coming after the only working class candidate in this race for support from labor unions. We should be outraged.
Raines was left largely unscathed by his opponents. He's taking a looser approach to campaign finance, saying it'd take millions of dollars to run the race until November.
And as much as I love to know that the grassroots movement is there and split four ways, it's not going to get us across the finish line, and we're going to be looking at a Republican back in Congress representing Montana.
Whoever wins the June 2nd Democratic primary will advance to the general election. The Western House seat is open as Republican incumbent Ryan Zinke is not seeking re-election. In Helena, I'm Shaley Rager.
President Donald Trump has approved major disaster declarations for seven states, including Montana. That word comes from the Federal Emergency Management Agency, which says besides Montana, Alaska, Idaho, Oregon, South Carolina, South Dakota, and Washington will get federal support for recovery needs. About 15 other states and tribes are waiting for answers on their requests. The announcement comes a few weeks into Homeland Security Secretary Mark Wayne Mullen's tenure. Mullen is aiming to speed up disaster response before the Atlantic hurricane season. The ongoing Homeland Security shutdown could affect FEMA's work. Its disaster relief fund is running low, and Trump has not approved hazard mitigation requests for more than a year. None of the approvals made this week includes hazard mitigation funding, a once typical add-on to disaster declaration support that helped communities build back with more resilience. For 45 years, the focus of the Montana Women's Run has been on health and camaraderie among women of all ages and abilities. YPR's Kay Erickson shares more on the history of the annual Saturday Before Mother's Day event.
It began in 1982 as a 5K and a 10K women's race at Pioneer Park near downtown Billings, put on by the men of the Yellowstone Rim Runners Running Club. About 200-plus women were entered. Participation waned until a group of women took over the race in 1986 to keep the event alive. They lined up sponsors and door prizes, changed the distances to 2 miles and 5 miles, and eventually settled on a downtown course. These women were visionary, says Eki Wedgel, a Women's Run board member, volunteer, and longtime participant. They were the ones that came up with a long-sleeve pink T-shirt.
In 1986, there was no such thing as a pink T-shirt for a race.
The long-sleeve T-shirt stayed. The run grew to almost 9,000 entries back in 2015. Then COVID hit and the numbers dropped. In 2025, entries were back up to around 5,000. Still one of the largest races in Montana and one of the largest women's events in the region. Since 1994, the race has given money back to the local community, which to date has been nearly $2 million, going to local groups like the Billings YWCA and the MSU Billings and Rocky Mountain College Women's Cross Country Scholarships. The run is Saturday morning, May 9th. Participants can walk, run, or wheelchair either distance. The run also offers a virtual 5-mile and 2-mile option. Wedgel, who participated in the very first race in 1982, says the best thing about the race is the camaraderie.
And the feeling of being downtown with all these women that are doing the same thing you're doing. And you don't know that until you get together with them.
Information and registration can be found at the race website, womensrun.org. In Billings, I'm Kay Erickson.
As winters get warmer and drier in Montana and over the rest of the western U.S., environmental advocates say the ski industry could do more to address climate change. Lara Hatch with Big Sky Connection has more.
An analysis by Yale Climate Connections of a ski industry report shows that the industry is taking action, but not with the urgency warranted by the rapidly warming climate. Auden Schindler led Aspen Skiing Company's sustainability program for 26 years. He says what's missing is a powerful voice.
You need a large, publicly traded company like Vail to publicly lobby, advocate, use voice, use trade group pressure to push on change. And that just hasn't happened.
Yale Climate Connections analyzed a National Ski Areas Association report called The Climate Challenge and identified several shortcomings with the ski industry's response to climate change. The National Ski Areas Association disputes these findings, saying the industry deserves more credit for its efforts. I'm Laura Hatch, reporting.
Wyotech, a leading U.S. automotive diesel welding and collision trade school based in Wyoming, is celebrating its 60th year of training technicians that keep the country's cars and trucks on the road. That's a dramatic turnaround that has prompted the motto, America's Destination Trade School. Founded in 1966, Wyotech has overcome economic and ownership challenges over the decades, but now is arguably at its all-time peak. Wyotech now is nearing enrollment capacity with its current footprint, just shy of 1,200 students, up from a mere dozen, when a group led by Jim Mathis, a Wyotech alumnus and former president, purchased the school in 2018. A grizzly bear translocated from near Glacier National Park to the Yellowstone area emerged from her den with two cubs in tow. Montana Public Radio's Nick Mott reports this is the first confirmed genetic connectivity between the two populations of grizzlies.
In a striking image, a hulking grizzly sow is looking up at a Wyoming bear monitoring flight. Next to the grizzly, two tiny cubs are wrapped around one another in a dry spot in the snow.
It's a really significant moment for Fish Wildlife Parks Montana, Greater Yellowstone Ecosystem, Wyoming as well.
That's FWP Chief of Conservation Policy Quentin Kujula in a video released by the department. It's also a moment that could put the animals one step closer to losing federal protections. The federal government has been trying to get Yellowstone area bears off the endangered list for more than two decades. Most recently, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals upheld Endangered Species Act protections for the grizzlies in part because this isolated population might face some major health issues in the long term due to lack of genetic diversity. To address this, the state of Montana in 2024 worked with Wyoming and Yellowstone National Park to move two grizzlies from near Glacier to the Yellowstone area. The hope was the bears would breed and improve the area's genetics. That hope came to fruition with the emergence of the two cubs. A rule from the federal government that could delist grizzly bears is expected in December. Congress is also considering a bill that could do the same. In Livingston, I'm Nick Mott.
Montana University system officials have unanimously agreed to hire the University of Montana's next president. Montana Public Radio's Edward O'Brien reports.
It took the Montana Board of Regents less than 10 minutes Tuesday to select Jeremiah Shin as UM's 20th president.
Those in favor, please signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed, same sign. Motion passes. Excellent.
Student Regent Carter Jasper said he's excited for UM.
I had the pleasure of talking with Dr. Shin a couple of times, and each conversation was more remarkable than the last. Dr. Shin is an excellent candidate and will be an excellent leader for the University of Montana.
Shin currently serves as interim president of Boise State University. In a statement included in a UM press release this week, Shin is quoted as saying, "I look forward to joining this extraordinary team to build on its strong foundation and to shape a bright future together," end quote. His selection follows a national search that drew more than 70 applicants from across the country. He's replacing Seth Bodner, who resigned earlier this year to run as an independent for Montana's U.S. Senate race. Shin begins his presidency July 1st. The position's annual salary is $467,000. Reporting from Missoula, I'm Edward O'Brien.
It's a midterm election year, and Montana's primary election is June 2nd. Yellowstone Public Radio and Montana Public Radio are working together to share profiles on candidates running for federal office in 2026. Today, we have a conversation between Montana Public Radio's Austin Amestoy and Ray Curtis, who's a Republican running for the Western U.S. House seat.
Would you tell us a little bit about what makes you the most qualified candidate for this job?
I never imagined I would put my name on the ballot, but I decided to because I am a constitutional scholar. I am a James Madison Fellow. I've taught American government for 40 years. I know the basic tenets of government. I understand about political parties and money in elections. And I also have lived in this district for almost my entire life, growing up on the Bozeman Pass, doing a stint on the railroad up by Essex, and I live in Tura now, Bonner area, and I know the area well.
I know that our listeners, to many of them, it may be really appealing to have someone who brings a wealth of constitutional experience with them to a job like this. And I'm wondering, though, because this job requires a marriage of knowledge of the inner workings of government, but also taking positions. How will your previous experience that you just cited help you if you were to go to Congress?
Oh, so that's interesting because as a government teacher, I tried not to take positions, but to explain both sides. And so I think I can have an empathy for, I know I can, an empathy for both sides of the issue.
Ray, you did ultimately decide to cast your name on with the Republicans for this election. Tell me about that decision.
I'm glad you asked that question because I am a huge fan of Lincoln, considered one of the greatest of Republicans. And how he felt about equality. I believe in Eisenhower's ideas about the budget and what we should spend money on. Right now, we spend almost $1 trillion on defense, and that's three times what China does, the next closest country. And Eisenhower said, we need that money to go towards taking care of people, like it says in the preamble, promoting the general welfare, you know, taking care of each other. And so those are two. But the last one I really want to emphasize is Ronald Reagan. His very last speech as president, he took the opportunity to talk about immigration and how we are a nation of immigrants. And if we lose that, we cease to be great.
Ray, let's talk about some issues here. The federal government last fall shut down over an impasse between Republicans and Democrats over subsidies for the Affordable Care Act. I'm wondering how you would have approached that vote.
Again, I'm going to cite Eisenhower, who said that is one of the primary functions of government. Some people are going to be very hurt by what came of that bill. And one of the things that came out of the bill that I just absolutely have to mention is adding to our debt. And for young people like you, Austin, that concerns me. And we need to figure out how to rein that in.
Speaking of reining in government spending, the Trump administration, at least on paper, made a very huge effort last year to downsize the federal government. Are you happy with the result of that effort? Or do you think further downsizing is necessary? How do you view the DOGE situation?
I lost my job because of DOGE. I was going to speak for Humanities Montana about the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. And it rankled me that we had an unelected multi-billionaire making these decisions that Congress should have been making. That is what their constitutional responsibility is. And again, it's another reason why I decided to put my name on the ballot, because I want to get back to those checks and balances and the role of Congress to do what they are supposed to do.
Let's talk briefly about foreign policy. The Trump administration moved pretty unilaterally in past weeks to take military action in Iran. What do you think about that decision, and should the administration have consulted Congress?
You use the word unilaterally, and that is so essential. Yes, Congress should have known before other people did. It was interesting how that notification took place. But Austin, I feel strongly that we are losing our standing in the world by talking about things like taking over Greenland, not supporting our NATO allies. Ukraine is hardly in the news right now, but they're still fighting 4 years later. We need to do something about that.
That was Montana Public Radio's Austin Amestoy speaking with Ray Curtis, running for the Western U.S. House seat. The interviews will also be available on our website at ypradio.org. Tomorrow, we'll hear from Sam Forstack, who's a Democrat running for Montana's Western U.S. House seat. That's The Worm for this Wednesday. Catch up with us tomorrow morning. We'll have another episode for you early birds then.
The Worm is a production of Yellowstone Public Radio. Theme music composed and recorded by Zach Jones at Rapscallion Recording. Metal art call captured by Jay McGowan for the Macaulay Library. More information about The Worm is available at ypradio.org.